This week on the show, baseball, baseball, baseball. Longtime Red Sox writer Sean McAdam joins us for our MLB preview. Jimmy Young steps into the studio as well to get nostalgic about opening day. All that and more, Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It's MLB preview. I am your host, Alex Barth. Joining us on the phone now, longtime Red Sox writer Sean McAdam, to break down opening day and take a look at the 2017 Red Sox season. Sean, thank you so much for taking the time here. Right after last pitch, we're recording this.
Yeah, my pleasure, Alex. Happy to be with you, and it's always fun to get the season started.
It absolutely, you know, the weather helped, everything came together, felt like a beautiful opening day. You're right, get the season started, get spring started, the Red Sox get started on the right foot. A 5-3 win, but it got a little nerve-wracking there at the end. What are they going to do about this bullpen until they get healthy? That seems to be the big takeaway from this game.
Yeah, I guess, as the season was getting underway and toward the end of spring training, the concern was sort of that bridge from the starters to Craig Kimbrell in the ninth inning. And they've acquired two guys in the last 18 months who could be pretty formidable eighth inning guys. Carson Smith, of course, in the trade with Seattle in December of 2015. And then Tyler Thornburg at the winter meetings back in December. Two hard-throwing, high strikeout, dominant stuff type guys, but are huge dealing with injuries, one far more serious than the other. Carson Smith is recovering from Tommy John surgery that he underwent last May or June and could be back in June. It appears as though Thornburg's absence will be shorter than that and not require any sort of surgery. He has a shoulder impingement that developed in spring training, and he's going to need a few weeks, maybe even a month. That's about how long Joe Kelly took to come back from that when he experienced the same thing. Everyone's a little different. But for the month of April, they're going to have to piece it together. And, Monday was a reminder that that can be a little dicey when you don't have experienced major league relievers. And I know Barnes has some experience success at the big league level, as does Hembree, but they're not the proven commodities that either Thornburg or Smith have been. And so it's going to be interesting to see how John Farrell navigates through this first month without either of those weapons.
Now, Drew Pomerantz has to be in the rotation for now because of the David Price injury, but there was talk over the spring about him having a bullpen role. Assuming everybody's healthy, assuming you have five other capable starters, where's the best place for Drew Pomerantz with this team?
Well, right now, because of David Price being sidelined, they don't have five other capable starters. And I think that the schedule called for him to throw to minor league hitters in kind of a sim game in Fort Myers this afternoon. I'm not sure how that went. They're probably just delivering that kind of information post-game. But they wanted to see some extra life on the fastball, better command and break on the curveball, before they sort of took the wraps off him. And, the plan is for him to pitch the sixth game of the season Sunday in Detroit. And thanks to the ability to backdate someone on the DL and it lasting only 10 days now instead of 15 as it's been for a long time, they put him on the DL to buy a little time, evaluate him down in Fort Myers, and make sure that some of that arm strength came back. So depending on whether they had, whether how he looked today, he could still pitch as quickly as Sunday against the Tigers. And they need him because David Price, of course, is probably a month plus away from returning. When Price is healthy, assuming that happens, then they have a tougher call to make as to who the odd man out is, and it may well be Pomerantz. He has pitched out of the bullpen in his career in Colorado and Oakland, so that's a possibility. But for now, they need him to be able to give them some innings as they wait for Price to return.
Andrew Benintendi had the 3-run home run today, kind of broke that thing open. He's put on some muscle, some weight. The great season last year, is it too much to say he is the front runner for Rookie of the Year?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at all the preview magazines and some of the newspaper sections from across the country that came out in the last few weeks, I don't know that I saw a single American League player cited more than once or twice as the pick for American League Rookie of the Year. He clearly is the head and shoulders favorite, and nothing that he did on Monday is going to dissuade anybody from thinking that way. As you mentioned, he did bulk up over the offseason and got a little stronger and thought it was a good balance, not so much that he was muscle-bound or not as flexible or athletic as he's been, but it does give him a little bit more pop, and we saw that today with him driving the ball out to right field for a three-run homer. Made a couple of nice plays in left field. I liked that deep that he showed on the ball that scraped the wall, kind of holding the runners up and giving them the illusion that he was going to catch that on the warning track. He's got great instincts. He doesn't seem overwhelmed by anything. He didn't seem it last August and September. And I think, you know, a full spring training with the team and the knowledge that he was the opening day left fielder right from the beginning probably allowed him to go about his business, and he had a great start on Monday.
Again, we're talking with Sean McAdam here in day one of the post-David Ortiz Red Sox existence. Benintendi had the home run. There's a guy they expect to make up some of the power numbers, but somebody who's going to draw direct comparison is probably Mitch Moreland, given he's at that first base kind of DH role. Was the only Red Sox today without a hit. I'm personally a fan of his game. I know a lot of people are sour on him. I'm in the minority for sure. Is there too much expected of Mitch Moreland, and is he a guy that can live up to the Red Sox fans' expectations? It's going to be hard today after that rough start.
Yeah, I mean, I know he had a few strikeouts today and didn't dig the ball. I think I was more surprised about his defensive struggles, if you want to call them that, the inability to dig a few throws out of the dirt. This is a guy who was the American League Gold Glove winner at first base last year, so defense was not supposed to be an issue. And I'm not suggesting that because he couldn't dig a few throws out on day one that all of a sudden he's suspect. I think to answer your question, Alex, I think a lot is going to be what are people's expectations? And if someone's going to be silly enough to say that he's David Ortiz's replacement, well, then get ready to be disappointed because he's nowhere near the hitter that David Ortiz was over the course of Ortiz's long major league career. What he is a guy that can, you know, hit 250, 260. He's not going to have a huge on-base percentage. He's going to strike out. He's going to be streaky. He's going to hit 20 to 25 home runs, and he's going to play an above-average first base. And for a year, and remember, he only got a year deal to sign here because I think they feel pretty good about Sam Travis as their first baseman from 2018 onward, and who knows, we may even see him at some point this year. But for a short-term commitment, I think he's a guy that Red Sox fans can live with, again, as long as the expectations are based in reality and not based in some illusion that he's going to be the guy who has to replace David Ortiz, because that's not who Mitch Moreland is and never will be.
From what you just described to me, maybe minus the defense, it sounds like, or would it be safe to say a poor man's Mike Napoli, similar to the situation when the Red Sox brought him in a couple of years ago?
I would say that Napoli's a more accomplished power guy. You know, he did have 30-plus home runs last year and more than 100 RBI. I'd say in the streaky part, they certainly share some characteristics. We all remember that there were times that Napoli just couldn't buy a hit for about a week. He'd pile up strikeouts two and three and four times a game. And then there would be something in his swing that he would fix and he'd go on one of those tears. I'd say that Moreland's extremes are not there. I don't think at his best he's going to be that kind of run producer. And neither do I think he's going to be look as lost as Napoli could be. A little bit more consistent and not as powerful, I guess, would be my quick scouting report if comparing those two.
Again, we're talking with Sean McAdam, and a lot to process. We have just 9 innings of baseball of 162-game season, but we've been without it for so long. People put a lot of stock into opening day. What's something you saw today from the Red Sox that you weren't expecting, something that's maybe a sign of things to come that stood out to you, surprised you about this team?
Well, I don't know that anything was necessarily a surprise, but I think there was some question heading into the start of 2017 about Rick Porcello, and was that kind of a fluke performance by him in 2016 when he was the American League Cy Young Award winner, and is it realistic to expect that you're going to see that kind of performance again? Well, until he got tired and some balls fell in on him in the sixth inning, you saw exactly the kind of guy that he was a year ago, throwing strikes, getting ahead, mixing pitches, working quickly, getting ground balls with that two-seamer. So as invigorating as it may have been to see Benintendi really turn on a ball and drive it out for ultimately what proved to be the winning margin, I'd say the takeaway today is that Rick Porcello picked up right where he left off, and for a team trying to navigate through the first month or so without David Price, that's a good sign indeed for the Red Sox.
We're talking with Sean McAdam, our Red Sox preview right there. When we get back on the other side, we'll take a look at some of what's going on elsewhere in the MLB. Take a look at what to expect in 2017.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Callin' It, brought to you by Snap Call Sports. I'm Alex Barth. We're joined on the phone by longtime Red Sox writer Sean McAdam. We broke down the Red Sox opening day. We'll take a look at the rest of the MLB. Might as well start in the AL East. You had the Yankees get shellacked yesterday. Toronto and Baltimore start the season off against each other, and it seems to be, Sean, the question in the AL East is who comes in second to the Red Sox at this point.
Yeah, I still like Toronto there, Alex. That would be a repeat of, although I'm trying to, yeah, I guess I know that Toronto and Baltimore were the wild card teams, and I was trying to remember where that game was played, and it was indeed played in Toronto, so that means the Blue Jays finished second. I see the Blue Jays second again. I think they have a deep rotation led by Sanchez. I think he could be a guy who really breaks out this year. They're going to miss Encarnacion, no question. I think Bautista could bounce back and have a better year. The Orioles, to me, there are too many questions about that rotation. Tillman, their best starter or their most experienced starter, starts the year hurt. They've got to get a lot out of Bundy and Gausman, two guys who have great potential but haven't done it on a consistent basis. So I'd worry about them. I think the Yankees are probably a year away. They're probably where the Red Sox were back in, say, 2015 or so, with a lot of their young players kind of getting their feet wet. And it's going to take a while when you introduce as many young players at once. It's unusual for it to gel quickly. And I also have questions about the Yankees' rotation. And I got Tampa Bay last, although their rotation is very good. So what else is new? The Rays can't score enough runs, and they don't have the wherewithal to go out and address injuries and depth issues once the season begins. So I think they're probably fated for the bottom.
Yeah, Tampa's going to be Tampa. You mentioned Edwin Encarnacion. He's now in Cleveland, and it really was an arms race at the winter meetings between the Indians and the Red Sox. It's got to be a two-horse race, the AL East, right? I mean, I've heard the Astros a little bit, but would it be surprising if the ALCS is anybody besides Boston and Cleveland?
No, that certainly would be my pick right now. I think they are the two best teams, although I don't feel as strongly about the Red Sox as I did a month ago with the injuries to Price and Thornburg. Depending on how long those last and whether there are long-term ramifications, that could, I thought the Red Sox were a 95-plus win team at the start of spring training. I don't have that optimism now because of the injuries, and I do question exactly where they are in terms of starting pitching depth, but I do think they have the best team on paper, and I think they'll win the division. I think Cleveland's the best team in the American League. Remember, as good as they were last year to go to extra innings of Game 7 in the World Series, they did so without their second and third best starters, and arguably their best overall player in Brantley, who missed most of last year. So add him, swap out Napoli for Encarnacion. That's a, you know, as good as Napoli was for him, I think Encarnacion will be better. And then, you know, put those two injured starters back in the rotation, and that is a tough team, and it's playing in a pretty mediocre division. Maybe if some veterans have a last gasp, Detroit is decent, and maybe with all their free agents to be, Kansas City has a little bit of urgency, but Minnesota and Chicago are not even trying. They're rebuilding. So, you know, with the unbalanced schedule, the Indians not only have a lot of talent, but they're going to have a lot of games against some pretty mediocre and rebuilding teams.
So, well, the AL's pretty clear-cut. The NL, even though you have the Cubs, who a lot of people have picked to repeat, you had that great game last night against the Cardinals. But the team that stood out to me yesterday, the San Francisco Giants, Madison Bumgarner, with the two home runs, took the perfect game into the fifth. Ultimately, the Giants end up losing the game. But, I mean, I think what Madison Bumgarner is doing right now, and to do it over this span, should he be an MVP candidate this season?
I think he could be. I mean, people have talked about, you know, his division mate and rival Clayton Kershaw as an MVP candidate because of what he means to the Dodgers. And you could make the case that given that the Dodgers have a better supporting cast than the Giants do, then that Bumgarner is even more critical to his team than Kershaw has been to his in the past. It's pretty rare for a starting pitcher to win an MVP, but if he can pitch like he usually does, and that's quite a high standard to begin with, and then chip in with, I don't know, what's a realistic number for him in terms of home runs over the course of a season? Can he, you know, can he get double figures? You start adding that in, and that tips the scale a little bit. He's fun to watch, and you know, I know in the East we tend to obsess a little bit about Red Sox-Yankee rivalry, but the Giants-Dodgers rivalry is a great one that transferred from the boroughs of New York to California. And when you have games, and I think they matched up maybe four times last year, luck of the draw, when you can watch games pitched by Kershaw against Bumgarner, I mean, that's just a treat for any baseball fan.
And I'll tell you this, the home run watch on Bumgarner is going to be fascinating all year. They talked about it. Manfred said last night, maybe him at the Home Run Derby. We will see. Sean McAdam, thanks so much for coming on, lending us your baseball knowledge. You can follow Sean on Twitter. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
My pleasure, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Callin' It, opening day MLB preview edition. Our producer, Jimmy Young, slides across the table for me. Jimmy, I know you were looking forward. Jimmy was texting me all week, and this guy gets so poetic about opening day and just such an old school, salty baseball fan. So we had to have him on. Jimmy's ode to opening day the next 10 minutes.
Ode to opening day. It is a special holiday. It's the first day of spring officially on the sports calendar. That's how I look at it. Opening day, very special in the hearts and minds of all Red Sox fans. You know what's incredible about this? Sure, the Red Sox are 1-0 now. Great performance today. Great game, at least one inning and the final inning and all that stuff. But it really showed what this team can actually do this year. It had strong starting pitching. It had a strong sort of strong performance by Craig Kimbrell at the back end of it. You had your rookie.
It was a very Kimbrell-esque performance.
Kimbrell-esque,
that was as
Kimbrell
as it gets.
On the edge.
They got
That's
the
right.
save. You got the save.
That's right. And Andrew Benintendi hits a home run. The kid, the new kid on the block, you know, everybody's touting him to be the next rookie of the year.
Right, and that's what Sean was just saying. Again, we were talking with Sean McAdam earlier. He said, yeah, absolutely should be the favorite.
But opening day is very special. I mean, a lot of people think frauds come out to the ballpark on days like this, all the big shots, and you have to be seen on opening day and all that. I've been there. I've seen it. Been there, done that. I don't need to be seen anymore. All I know is for the next 161 days, give or take a week or two for off days along the way in the All-Star break, there'll be a team playing in the area. There's no other sports town in America that lives and dies with each season through their own teams. professional teams here. And that's why being a Red Sox fan is so special. It affects your mood. When the Red Sox win, you're in a good mood. When they lose, you're bitching and moaning. So in this particular case, I'm in a good mood. The Red Sox season's underway, and I am already on record as saying that they will play the Cubs in the World Series because that's the best storyline in Major League Baseball this year. It's the one that hasn't happened yet.
So before we get into all of that, because that was a lot,
you gave me an opening. Oh,
let me ask you, and obviously, like, so there, to me, there's two parts of opening day. There's the fact that it's the start of baseball season, which obviously is great because it's spring and it's baseball, and that's wonderful, and I can sit out in my backyard, listen to the radio, listen to the game, whatever. And that part's all well and good. But there's also the part of opening day that's, you know, opening day, the event, whatever, the first Monday in April, which, to me, I'm a little worried that the MLB is starting to kind of ruin that. Because, look, you don't even have opening day anymore. You had, four or five games yesterday. They're playing it. They're starting the season in Boston, which we lucked out this year because it was, you know, 60 degrees and sunny on Monday. But last year, remember, in Cleveland, opening day got rained out.
Snowed out, I think.
I think you're right.
Snowed out.
And, I mean, there's so much, like, the extra fanfare for just one game. To me, they're watering it down.
No, they're not. There's always going to be an opener. There's always going to be a home opener.
No, there is. And you're right. But what do I care about Giants? And granted, it was a fantastic game. I talked about it. What do I care about Giants, Diamondbacks? What do I care about Tampa Bay Yankees?
Pittsburgh Pirates.
No, but because they're playing the Red Sox. So here's my point. They used to do just the night, like the NFL does. The night before, you had opening night, which was the World Series champion playing their home opener.
Right.
And then the next day, you had everybody else. And it was like that first day of March Madness. You're back and forth between the games, and you got, 15 games going on, 13 games going on. And it was great. Now it's also staggered. And the Cubs didn't even play the first game of the year, which to me is just weird. I don't know. I feel like they're stretching it all out.
But they played the first night game, didn't they? Didn't they play last night?
But it's not the first game. But it's not. But so why does it have to be a game before that? To me, they're trying to turn it into the NFL and make each game appointment viewing. And that's just not baseball.
And although what you're saying, though, is what baseball is trying to do is to look more like football, which they recognize is a more popular sport than their own
sport.
But
it doesn't work with their sport.
No, it doesn't. But they don't care. They're still going to try to mimic the most successful league.
You don't think that lessens opening day just a little bit?
No, I don't, because there's always a home opener. Now, game two, sure. Game two on Wednesday night could be 45 degrees and snowing.
You more celebrate the home opener for your team than what is MLB's opening day.
Correct. I could care less about
I love the home opener. I'm saying more so opening day.
I don't think
the first baseball, day of baseball.
Especially the first day of baseball in your hometown is special, whether it's the first game of the league or the first game of the season. It's the first game for your team.
I will say this, and I used to hate it when I was a kid that the Red Sox never opened at home. But the Red Sox should never open at home. They got lucky today.
No, I agree. I never understood why in the world, with all the dome stadiums and the warm weather towns, why they don't progressively come up north and not play before like April, weekend with Patriots Day weekend. That should be the
opener. You don't want a home opener there because that's 2-3 weeks. Then you get the competitive disadvantage where you're playing so many home games at the end of the year. Give it a week. Have them play two series on the road. Give it a week. Start the season off, the six-game road trip. That way you still get the ace starting at home.
They play Wednesday, and then they go on the road, don't they, this weekend? I'm pretty sure that's
Thursday, because they're off tomorrow.
Right.
They do that other weird thing where you have opening day, and then you have a day off, which I've never understood.
Oh, come on, Alex. You understand why they do that. Come on.
No.
Has to do with – you have no – really? How many – what is the percentage of opening days that are rained out and have to be made up the next day?
Okay.
Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
Weather 101,
New
England boy. Come on.
Wait a minute.
The weather will change next minute. You know, tomorrow it'll be a different day, just like yesterday to today.
Why not play 1-2-3 off day and then travel?
No, because you want the opening day to make sure it gets played because you have a sellout, an automatic sellout. You're not going to sell out that second game. To be honest with you, I think it's stupid that they play it at night. I think that's when they should play a second, maybe a late afternoon game. Let people take off from work at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock, however you want to do it. But at 7 o'clock at night, or even it is 7 o'clock at night, it's crazy. It makes no sense to me. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
I'm good. Thanks.
So you mentioned before your World Series prediction. You have Red Sox, Cubs. I think we had Jared Trupe on last week. I think he said the same thing.
A lot of people. It's a very popular pick this
year. He was between the Red Sox and the Indians out of the AL, but that seems to be the consensus. It's going to be Red Sox or Indians against the Cubs.
And I think it's going to be Dodgers and the Cubs in the National League. Those are going to be the best teams.
So I don't know if you saw that Giants game yesterday.
I did not.
Madison Bumgarner had a perfect game through five and hit two home runs.
That's awesome.
If that Giants, they're similar to the Red Sox. That team's ready minus the bullpen. That team's good to go. Mark Melancon blew it. Their entire bullpen blew it. I think they had like three chances. But before we get to the Cubs and all that.
I never liked Melancon, by the way.
Yeah, me neither. Madison Bumgarner, I can't get a perfect game through five. Two home runs. One of them an absolute moonshot of Zach Greinke. He's one of only two players in the MLB to hit multiple home runs against Kershaw and Greinke, probably the two best players in his league.
He's got a bright future as a DH in the American League after his time pitching.
They've used him as a DH. They've used him as a pinch hitter.
Sure, it makes sense. If he can hit, why not?
Have you ever seen a pitcher, because you've been watching the game a lot longer than I have, and I promise that's not a dig at your age.
I was not around for Babe Ruth.
Well, no, I know that, but you were around before DH role.
Yes, I
was. You saw baseball before DH role.
Yes, I was.
Have you ever seen a pitcher this adept at hitting, and not a pitcher who's as dominant as Bumgarner, who's also that adept with the bat?
Not really. The thing that impresses me the most about Bumgarner is he's not just a singles hitter either. He's got power.
No, he rakes.
I know.
He rakes.
He doesn't get cheated at the plate. And no, I cannot think of another pitcher off the top of my head. I can go back to the 60s maybe, and there was a guy that pitched for the Red Sox named Earl Wilson who was a pretty good hitter.
So
that was definitely before your time, but it was in the 60s,
before my time,
and I was younger than you are.
Let me guess, the 67 Red Sox, wonderful.
No, and you know what? It's a 50th anniversary.
It is, and I'm guessing, those throwbacks, those road throwbacks they wear, or the throwbacks, home throwbacks they wear, the white with the red hat and the piping around the waist, it's just a pullover.
But that was 75. That was the 75 team.
Was that 75? Yeah, they should bring those back. They wore them last year as Pomerantz's first start. Those were great.
75, but not 67 was the traditional whites and grays. In fact, the gray uniforms are some of the ugliest you've ever seen. Why the Boston was spelled out with blue lettering?
Well, they brought
that
back a couple years ago, and you're right,
horrible.
It was terrible.
Horrible.
It's terrible.
So one of the worst uniforms in sport.
Disgusting. Okay. Anyway, back to the Cubs now.
Good uniform, Doc.
Hey,
that's what opening day is all about.
I am all for good. I follow UniWatch on Twitter. It's an entire blog dedicated to uniforms and equipment. I will have a good uniform discussion.
Well, speaking
discussion
of equipment, what was the highlight today? What was the highlight of before the game?
Okay. Well,
come on.
Anytime Tom Brady shows up at a non-Patriots event, I lose my – anytime he shows up at a Patriots game, I lose my mind. But anytime he shows up at a non-Patriot event, I love the cohesiveness between the teams in this city.
It is amazing.
And how they all play off each other. And I don't get how people like only like a couple teams. One of my best friends he likes three of the teams, then he's a Yankee fan.
Yeah.
And I know why he is. I mean, it's a family thing, but – like, for instance, something like today, he's like, oh, yeah, it was cool. Brady was at the Red Sox. I'm like, you can't appreciate that because you're not a Patriots fan.
Yeah.
Or because you're not a Red Sox fan. Like, we all got a little nervous when Gronk fell, but I could watch Brady and Gronk.
Story. For those of those who didn't see it, Brady
so
came,
Brady
out, with
came
the
out with the jersey that was stolen, that was brought to Mexico. I think the guy put it in the dry cleaner because it was tiny on him in the dryer. But so Brady holds it up. Lion King style. I'm near tears. Like it was an emotional moment.
It was great.
It was an emotional
it
moment.
Was great.
Brady goes Lion King with the jersey. The trophies are out there. It's him, RKK, Gronk, White, Lewis. I think somebody else was out there. And then so you get. And here's what was beautiful about it. You even though something else happened, don't want to spoil it. You got the moment. There was enough of the moment where Brady's there holding up the jersey.
Right.
And then Gronk comes in and grabs it and starts waving it over his head.
And running away
running around
it.
The field. Brady chases him out to the outfield, tackles him, which you can add to the list of things only Tom Brady can do. He's the only NFL player to tackle Rob Gronkowski in the open field. And then they're just rolling around on the grass. The crowd's going nuts. Oh, it was such a moment.
And we still have moments every time I see Gronkowski go down. The next thing in my head is,
right, and then I was
please
like,
get
no,
up.
Don't. He slipped
please
on the outfield.
Up.
No,
please
oh, no, oh, no. But
both of them, please get up. It was funny. They're two little kids out there.
They really were. And you look at the look on their face. They loved it.
That's the beauty of sport. My God, these guys are professional athletes. They're all incorporated. They're all corporations. And yet those two guys especially have such a joie de sport. They have just a joy.
They're enjoying it.
They love it. And good for them. And, of course, Mr. Brady is a fierce competitor.
But you know what? Enough Patriots talk here on our MLB opener. No, but
it was great. It was a great opening day.
It was a great opening day moment for sure.
You can't go wrong when you bring in the other teams. You just can't.
You can't. You
and my favorite is when Russell or...
Yeah, 2 years ago, Ortiz
or
and Brady.
Yeah, it all came out. That was
and
just
that's,
the coolest.
I was trying to figure out how many
rings.
That's
like Mount Rushmore.
How many
you know?
Rings is that? That's, what, 11 for Russell? Or of what, two or three?
Two.
Four is two, so that's 13. Brady had four at the time, 17. That's 20 rings.
Yeah, that's not bad. As many points as James White scored.
That's right.
I think he was. Was he there today?
He was there today. Okay. It was him, Lewis, Gronk, Brady, Kraft, and I can't remember if somebody else was there.
Very cool.
I thought what they were going to do, because we know how the Red Sox love to make moments way too cheesy,
right,
was have Brady throw out the first pitch, have Edelman catch it, and have him like bobble it at
and
his
catch
feet.
It right at the edge.
Right. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't do that. But he was presenting at the ACMs last night. But then again, Gronk was at WrestleMania, and he still made it back.
That's funny. That's good stuff. That is good
but
stuff.
But anyway.
You guys are so spoiled and so blessed in your lifetime to have seen all these championships and people my age, and I am going to be 60. It's just...
Congratulations.
Thank you. We went through... I haven't made it there yet, by the way. We went through what we went through in 67, in 75, in 78, and then, of course, all the Patriot disappointments in 86, the Red Sox in 86. I mean, we really were lovable losers for 30, 40 years. We were Cleveland, if you will, for a long time.
Look, Tommy Karen said it today on Twitter. Tell somebody from 2000 that the Patriots quarterback is right. Bringing the fifth Lombardi trophy to Red Sox opening day, where they're the favorites to win their fourth ring in
right.
The last 15 years.
Yeah.
Right? It's insane. Celtics are right there. Grown on the Celtics. The Bruins are the hottest team in hockey.
Right now.
Who would have thought?
Five straight. This is a good thing. It's
this
a great
is,
town.
You know
it's
what?
A great time.
People are bringing up, and I don't mean, we're going to get back to the baseball in a second, folks. I promise again.
Oh, yeah, the I'm sure they're on the edge of their seat.
Keeping us sidetracked.
I can't keep you on it. That's right. I'm the king of the sidetrack.
So people keep bringing up 2007 because of all the moves the Patriots are making. And we all know why they're bringing it up. I won't say it because I refuse to say it.
I'll say it.
On the table. 2007. Please don't on my show. But.
Okay.
Remember, through all the incredible, through the run we're on since 2000 run with the four teams, only once have two teams won in the same season. It seems
right.
Nearly, I mean, and you've had where, you know, they're close, but it's different calendar years.
Right.
2007 was the only year because you had the Red Sox and the Celtics and you almost had the Patriots.
Yeah.
Here we are 10 years later, 10 years after what may have been the greatest year in a city sport, in sports history for one city.
Yep.
You have the Celtics right on the doorstep. You have the Bruins playing well. The Red Sox are one of the favorites, and the Patriots are loading up.
Yeah, and the
it
thing,
feels like 2007
but Alex,
again.
Do they have to win a championship to be successful? Are they not providing us entertainment?
Which team are you talking about?
Take them all.
Well,
we're
I mean,
so spoiled. We all in this town. If you don't win a championship, you're a loser.
Define,
and that is ridiculous.
Define success. They're succeeding in entertaining
correct.
Us, but it's not
correct.
It's not Bill Belichick's goal to keep the fans entertained. Brad Stevens doesn't care if
that's
I mean,
his job. His
cares,
job
but,
is to win,
right.
And they should try and
so,
do his,
so
do his job
it,
as
so
best
I,
to his ability.
I mean it from that point of view. But no, it feels like it really does feel like 2007
all
over again.
I can't be disappointed.
When's
with
the last
any
time all
anymore?
Four teams were really fired? And the Bruins aren't quite there, but for the sake of the argument, we'll say the hottest team going into the playoffs generally has a chance at the cup, and the Bruins are the hottest team right now. When's the last time all four teams were firing on all cylinders like this? It's been a while.
It has been, absolutely. I agree. And the revolution just got started. I had to say it.
I know. I saw it coming. I saw it. They won last
they won,
night,
they
I think.
Won, they won their they first won, game over the weekend.
They still never won a championship,
they
right?
They are the Buffalo Bills of Major League Soccer.
So you know, you know what's funny? You know what's funny? The Boston Cannons, one of the few original franchises left, they've been a couple championships. They've never won one either. They've been the best team in the league, two or three. So I guess it's a race
soccer
between
and lacrosse. That's
it's a
riot.
Race between the Revs and the Cannons. Who will get there
that.
First?
I love that.
You know what? We'll save the rest of the MLB stuff for next week. I think that's a good place to leave
good
it.
Stuff.
We will stop right there.
And 162-0, baby.
It's on the table.
Happen.
It's on the table. It's the Red Sox and the Patriots. Look, hey, we may this city might not lose again for
ever,
years.
Ever.
For years. Put the T in the harbor, baby. Start the duck boats. That's going to be my new ringtone. Anyway, for Sean McAdam, who joined us earlier for our more textbook MLB preview for Jimmy Young, for just kind of hyping up the mass hole in all of us. I'm Alex Barth. We'll be back next week. Hey, we'll review the Masters. That's right. not only is all this great team sports going on, the best golf tournament in the world, one of my favorite weekends coming up. And we will have more as well. Enjoy the national championship game. Enjoy baseball. Enjoy the Masters. Once again, for Sean McAdam, Jimmy Young, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Calling It with Alex Barth. This episode has been brought to you by Snapcall Sports. Snapcall, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.